And at 23 minutes after the hour, it's time to strike up a conversation with Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a resident of Garden Valley, Texas. That's where he's coming to us from. Did I just dangle a participle?
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
You dangled it quite nicely.
Won't happen
nicely,
again.
It's a nice job.
Won't
of
happen again.
I have a question. Yes. I have a question before we get to the question answer portion of the program. You just spent all this money in this new whiz bang webcam.
Yeah.
That's making the right side of your forehead bleach out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just so sensitive to the room light. Don's picture is great.
Oh, well, thank
and
you.
I don't know that you're welcome. And I don't know if he spent all that money on a super whiz bang webcam or not.
Okay, well, I don't know.
Did you, Don?
No. It's just the camera on my computer, on my laptop.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, it's the lighting, but it looks fine. I think it might be your right eye, David. It's the problem here.
No, it'd be like my left eye.
Okay. All right.
It's on the right. See the right side of his forehead, Don, is the hairs are bleached out. I mean, it's like if you had a really intense flood lamp.
How's that? Does that fix it?
Oh, much better.
Okay.
He did have a flood lamp.
Uh-huh.
Well, I spend much of my life in the dark. I might as well do it here in the office, too, here. So, okay. All right.
Which is what my my minister said on Sunday. He said, what kind of lights do they use on the ark? And it's flood lamps.
Oh, boy.
A groaner. Well, hey, it's a Lutheran church. Give him a break, yeah. Okay? All right.
It's a Lutheran, you know.
We've got a topic today that befuddles me. We've been deep into COVID and masks and viruses and regulations and the effects on your DNA of vaccines and so forth. A little change of gears here, change of direction. Because mostly we talk about evolution or what's wrong with evolution, more apropos, I suppose. And Don, you found an article. God is so good at big stuff. I mean, mountain ranges and rushing rivers and surging oceans and planetary systems and galaxies. And it turns out he's pretty good at the small stuff too, as exemplified by butterfly wings, huh?
Yes, by the butterfly. It's amazing. You know, of course the. You know, you look at a butterfly and you, of course, you know, we like to see the beauty of the various butterflies. And we, if you go into a butterfly where they've hatched, basically have not hatched, but have a butterfly.
What do you call that when they emerge from a cocoon? So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you're fascinated by them, just watching them kind of flitter here and flitter there. You wouldn't necessarily think that, oh, gee, their flight, it looks a little stilted.
It looks erratic is what it does. Does he know where he's going? Yeah.
A little erratic, and you would say, I don't know if that was, how efficient those wings are. And so the evolutionists, didn't think they were very efficient at all. As a matter of fact, quite inefficient and unstable, just grossly looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
But then a group of scientists decided, well, we're going to study the butterfly flight and see exactly what, you know, all this wing to a little bitty body, you know, has to do with their flight. And is it really inefficient or is it uniquely designed? So these two scientists, Johansson and Henningsen, recently published an article in the Royal Society regarding butterfly flight and efficient propulsion with a clapping mechanism owing to their flexible wings. So that's the title of the article. Mm-hmm. And so they found out that the wings were indeed quite efficient. And the way they did it, they used some high-tech techniques. One was to analyze the basically the velocity of the wings using a velocimeter, a three-dimensional velocimeter, and then they looked at the traveling of the wings with kinematic type of techniques. And so what they found, there's two strokes, obviously, anything that's flying, you know, there's an upstroke and then there's a downstroke. Well, if you have big wings, you would think the upstroke would be working against you.
Yeah, push you down. Yeah.
It would be pushing you down instead of pulling you up. But the butterfly actually is quite unique in that the upstroke of the wings, since the wings are flexible, they actually trap air, and they do what's called mechanical clapping, wing clapping, if you will, because the two wings actually come together. And what they found was not only do the two wings come together, but they form an air pocket, and then the air is, with the continued compression of the wings together, pushes the air backwards and sort of gives the butterfly kind of jet propulsion to move forward. So the upward clapping of the wings actually propels the butterfly forward, whereas the downward motion of the wings, of course, provides the flight or the stability, you know, in the air. So if you see kind of the butterfly, you know, jumping around or kind of, you know, hopping around, it is because of that type of motion. But indeed, when compared to other winged insects, for example, they found that the butterflies were almost 28% more efficient in their flight than other insects. So this type of flapping of the wings, and it mainly attributed to the flexibility of the wings and how these wings come together, you know, is indeed quite efficient. And now, you know, folks are talking about, well, we can use this efficiency and we can develop drones that flap their wings. If we design a wing, you know, wings after the butterfly wings, now we can have maybe efficient drones that can fly around, and we can use this type of mechanism to propel, you know, to propel drones, for example. And so there's research going on to actually explore that. All that to say is that your first impressions when you, you know, look at things may be, well, you know, that's not really that efficient, or that's not really that well designed, or maybe God made a mistake here. don't really know why that's designed that way. But when you actually explore it and do the necessary research in the study, you invariably determine that, hey, not only is this designed well, it's extremely efficient. And instead of looking at the things around us and saying everything evolved, and therefore, you know, whether they're creatures, insects, or whatever it happens to be that we're looking at, instead of saying that, oh, they're in various stages of evolution, so they probably aren't that efficient, we should then, you know, say that, gee, if everything was designed and made by God, and we know that, you know, from Genesis, when after he created everything, he said everything was very good, it was perfect, we should, you know, look at the things that he's designed, and maybe we can learn some lessons.
We should kind of take him at his word, wouldn't you say?
We should take him at his word, and if especially if you're an engineer.
Yes.
You know, I can't imagine an engineer, you know, looking at the world around him and saying, "Wow, you know, I need to design this thing, whatever it happens to be." So why not just look at the things, you know, the plants or the animals around, you know, around you, and then study them to come up with the most efficient design for your product or whatever it is that you're designing, whether it be a bridge or flying something flying or, you know, a boat going through water or submarines. You might want to look at whales, for example, when you're looking at diving type of vehicles and other types of, you know, things. So look at what God designed first. And then see if there's something useful for you to use in your design of whatever it is that you're doing. You could probably make it much more efficient, and you can probably save yourself a whole lot of time in, you know, fluid dynamics, for example, in studying these type of things, rather than, you know, kind of a trial and error. We'll just design this wing, for example, and see if it works, and then we'll put it in a wind tunnel, and maybe we can cut out some steps if we just look at creation. Unfortunately, I mean, and for example, I'll give you another example. So there is a there is bacteria that have flagella. And we probably talked about the flagella and the mechanism for the bacteria actually moving with the flagella. You know, if you look at it under a microscope, it looks like the flagella is actually wiggling, you know, back and forth, and then that allows the bacteria to move. Well, if you actually look at the mechanism behind it, the flagella is rotating at extremely high speeds. And so at the base of the flagella inside the bacteria is, or in the, you know, in the built into the bacterial wall, if you will, is this very efficient rotary motor. And so one would say, well, gee, I want to duplicate something like that. So you would basically, all of the parts are now known for this rotary motor inside the bacteria, and it rotates at, you know, can rotate up to 100,000 RPMs. Well, we don't have very many motors that can rotate at that speed.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, yeah.
And here is a bacteria rotary motor or engine, if you will, that is made up of proteins and is powered by adenosine triphosphate. So it's all chemical kind of reactions that take place in order to rotate this flagella, which is much longer than typically the bacteria itself, and in order for it to move along in whatever solution or whatever medium it's in. So if we look at God's creation and say, isn't God wonderful? He created and designed perfect things. Maybe we can learn something. We could probably save ourselves, like I said, a lot of time. Instead of saying, which these researchers said, for example, gee, this evolved quite a ways in, you know, in the system of things, and much further than we ever thought, you know, possible, basically, is what they're saying. So instead of giving God the credit for what he's designed, you know, man looks at it and says, okay, well, you know, evolution is fantastic, and gives the credit to evolution, which is, God's word has something to say about that.
You know, I'm curious about people who consider themselves evolutionists, and they read up on it, and they seem to fight for it like it was a faith system, which I guess is what it's turned out to be. But when an earlier assumption goes bad, how many people are open to that information? How many evolutionists will say, well, yeah, there's a so-called a butterfly in the ointment that goes against everything that we thought about butterflies. We should re-examine other things as well. That would be a scientific approach, wouldn't it? We have to re-examine, we have to recalculate, we have to go back to the earliest evidence and question our assumptions.
Well, one would think that you would do that. And if you get enough of those, which now there are so many examples of things being so eloquently designed as opposed to just haphazardly thrown together, that you would say, you know, you'd have to be forced, I mean, to continue to say that things just evolved. So, for example, in geology, you look at the geological record and it looks like, well, you know, there were periods, this is what the evolutionists would say, there were periods where there were bursts, different developments in developments into different types of animals and plants. And so we go from just a slow and gradual type of evolution to what now the theory is punctuated evolution, where you have these periods of time in history where evolutions just seem to, develop by leaps and bounds. We don't know why they developed by leaps and bounds, but obviously they did, because we've got this record in the fossil record that obviously demonstrates that by different layers in the soil. Well, if you don't read scripture, you don't know that the different layers in the soil were made at the time of the flood and shortly post flood. And so the actual layers and the different creatures and plant life that are in those layers are directly related to whether you're close to the sea or you're not close to the sea, and how much, how big the tsunami was that crashed into the continents that were breaking apart at the time of the flood. And so you get the whole story wrong, and you imagine all of these other things that could have been quickly resolved if you just read your history book, the basic history book, which of course is the Bible. And especially the earlier chapters within the Bible, if you just read Genesis and say, okay, what information can I glean from this, as opposed to saying, well, that's just a book of fairy tales to just make man feel good about himself, or the feel good that, okay, we've got somebody outside the space-time domain that we can rely on. You can save yourself a lot of headache and actually get down to the basics, which is, God created everything, and everything is created by God, and everything was created for, obviously, for Jesus and for us. This domain that we live in, which, is Earth, was once ours. We gave it over to Satan, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. But if you look at, for example, this scripture, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen. Since the creation of the world, his visible attributes are clearly being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and a Godhead. So his creation then speaks of him and who he is. And if we ignore his creation and ignore that God had created it, then we don't see the Godhead and we don't see his eternal power. So that, it's the verse goes on, it says, so that they are without excuse.
Here's a tougher question for you, and I don't mean to get too metaphysical here, but what is the payoff? What is the reward for discovering things that evolutionists would say happened automatically and naturally out of chaos just by happy circumstance, and discrediting creationism? I mean, what's the payoff for an evolutionist here? Why do they do that?
Well, the payoff, of course, is quite simple. It has to do with, are you accountable to anyone? And an evolutionist, of course, is not, would say that there is no one to be accountable to.
Hmm.
So it's all about accountability. And it has, you know, most part, it has nothing to do with science because it's not even a theory. It's just a guess out as to how things, you know, came about, although there are evolutionists now that are claiming that it is fact. And if you, you know, in the textbooks, they're saying evolution is now a fact, and it's the farthest thing from that. But it has to do with, am I accountable to anyone? I don't want to be accountable to anyone. Hmm. So therefore, I don't want to hear that there is a creator and I'm accountable to him.
Humanism, in other words.
Yes, very much so. We then become gods.
Hmm. I'm sitting here cataloging all the bugs I've ever been acquainted with. And there are more ways to fly. It seems like flying's easy, you know? I mean, think of house flies and bees and little and moths and butterflies and birds. Seems like God had that down. Sorry, Dave, go ahead.
How tough could it be if all these bugs do it?
Yeah, it seems like if you could just flap hard enough.
Yeah.
And in fact, mankind has wanted to do that since at least Greek times.
Right.
Icarus and in the old mythology part of it. But yeah, flying seems to have been there all along, and they had to look at birds and try to imitate them. I got to tell you about it had to be a butterfly, but maybe it was a moth. I don't really know the difference between the two other than coloration and so forth. Maybe they're different species, Don. You could guide me in that. But I was working in the office up in Minnesota there. It was the summertime, and I had a screen door closed. It was like sliding screen doors that opened to a big deck there, and I had just the screen closed. I was sitting at the computer doing my thing, and I glanced over at this screen door, and there was one of the most beautiful creatures clinging to that screen that I've ever seen, and it had to be moth/butterfly, but it was an intense lime green, probably 5 inches from top to bottom. I mean, it was a big thing, and the wings looked like harps, like they were hollow, like they were just an outline of a harp. It was a stunning creature, and I have to look it up someday and see if I can identify it. I have such a vivid memory of this thing, but it wasn't there but for a few seconds, and then it took off and it was gone, and yes, it could fly. God has done some amazing things, and just the sight of that was a blessing.
Yes, I mean, it's just the beauty. I mean, the variation. I think one of the things that fascinates us about butterflies, too, is just the variation in color, as you just, you know, just mentioned. Some of them are lime green, some of them are yellow, some of them have, you know, spots on their wings. A lot of them actually have spots on their wings. And if you look at them from the top when they're, you know, kind of sitting stable and their wings are spread out, the spots on their wings actually are a deterrent to their predators, because it fools them to think, well, that's a bigger animal, and if I go to try to eat that thing,
it'll beat me up. Yeah.
But they come in all different types of colors and variations, and it's just one of those marvels, you know, to see. And so, you know, from an evolutionary point of view, beauty has no explanation as to why things are beautiful. We have an explanation. It's obviously the verse that I was quoting from, you know, says is to glorify God. It's to show his power and his eternal Godhead and to, you know, to glorify him. And so, and for us, for our enjoyment as well. I mean, why would we be able to see color in the first place if we?
You know, what is the purpose of beauty?
Yeah, I mean, there is no explanation from an evolutionary point of view. You know, you could, I guess, you could imagine the, you know, for the more beautiful things would perhaps survive, unless you're a flower, in which case you're picking the flower it's more beautiful. But anyway, that's another question that I don't think the evolutionists could satisfactorily answer.
Well, there's beauty in everything, from little tiny things to great big things. Sunsets, sunrises, stars at night. Pretty astounding to consider all that. Evolution? Yeah, not so much. Dr. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, I want to mention their website to you. It's creationmoments.com, and they have quite a library, quite a list of resources of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation, and it makes a whole lot of sense. You could spend some time there, maybe. creationmoments.com, we recommend it to you. Dr. Don, thanks again for spending time with us this week. We will look forward to next Tuesday, and whatever you come up with, we're eager for it.
Okay. Very good.
See you.
Well, I hope we enjoyed the butterflies today.
We did. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too.